Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the regularly scheduled September 7th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District. It's nice to see a crowd out there. And tonight we have the privilege, and let me see where we are on the, oh, I know what I have to do first. It's always like the first time of chairing a meeting for me. The board in closed session considered a review and possible action on an appointment of a district employee and a public employee performance evaluation of the superintendent's goals. There was discussion on both items and no action was taken. Now, let's see. Okay, we're in open session. Consensus on the order of business. Okay. We'll go ahead and do the approval of the minutes, and then we're going to have a presentation by the San Luis Obispo High School Jazz Chorus. Chamber Choir. All right. Sorry. Thank you. It's written so many different ways on here. I was trying, but Kim did send me a note. So Chamber Choir. All right. So let's look at the minutes. I think we just have two sets, and we'll consider them independently. Anybody? Pardon? Oh, I'm sorry. We had a request on a matter of personal privilege by Marilyn Roger. Go ahead, Marilyn. Don't start the clock on her, Chris.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I came tonight because we had some very important things to discuss in closed session, but I would ask for the indulgence of my fellow board members. My mother had heart surgery today at Stanford Hospital and was in recovery this afternoon, but I need to be able to be in telephone contact with my family, particularly my sister out of state. So I'm distracted, and really I think it's best that I leave tonight and tend to my family business. And I believe we have a quorum, so I'm going to leave at this time. Thank you.
Well, we wish you well, Marilyn, and your mother well, and we totally understand, and I very much appreciate, and I'm sure the board does, you showing up under these circumstances to discuss the things in closed session. So, goodbye. Okay. We'll go ahead and take under consideration the minutes of August 17th.
I move for approval of the August 17th minutes.
Let's see. Yeah, we're okay. I'll second. Ellen, why don't you move on down when you get a moment, if you'd like to. It feels like you're so far to the left. So, sorry. So it's a motion by Mr. Angel, second by the chair. Is there any corrections or discussions on the minutes? Seeing none?
Okay. I will need to abstain.
See, now. Oh, that's why you were counting. We're still okay. Okay, so all in favor? Aye. Opposed? And one abstention. Passes 4-0 with one abstention. And next, the minutes of August 31st. And let's see. You're okay with that? Okay.
Move approval of the minutes of August 31st.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Angel. Any discussion or corrections? All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. And next, a presentation. Who's going to handle the presentation?
Okay, let's...
Will.
There we go, Will.
There you go, Will. Good to see you.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Will Jones, principal of San Luis Obispo High School, and happy to have here tonight with us Mr. Paul Osborne, our choir director, and members of our chamber singers. This is not the complete chamber singers, but it's early in the year, and these are students who were in chamber singers last year who are back this year, and the rest of this group will be filled out as the year goes along. So they're here to sing a number for you.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much, and thank you for selecting a song that was current for the older members of the board. It was very great. We appreciate it. And Mrs. Sheffer thinks we should start every meeting with a song from you guys. Okay, thanks. Good night. That's great. And tonight we have a full cadre of high school representatives to give us a report. So to avoid any semblance of favoritism, I'm going to do it alphabetically. We're going to start with Morrow Bain. Connor, go ahead and give your last name too, and go ahead and present your report. You can just do, you've got a microphone right there. You could even stay for the meeting and speak up on items.
There we go. Okay. I'm Connor Rupert, and I'm from Morrow Bain High School, and I'm the ASB vice president, and I'm filling in for Amanda. She's at a Friday Night Live meeting. The beginning of this year, we had a slight scheduling problem with too many kids in each class, and so our classes were pretty full. But we had new sections added, thankfully, and now our classes are normal size, which we're really happy about. So far this year, we've had our first assembly, which was our welcome back pep rally assembly. We introduced our new foreign exchange students, our new faculty, and we played a few games and got everybody excited for the new school year. Also, we had our first dance, which was our welcome back dance, and we had about 300 people attending, which was pretty good for our first dance, and we're excited about that, too. Coming up in the next month or so, actually the day after tomorrow, we have Club Rush, which is where our club representatives set up in our main quad to get students involved and have them come pick a club that interests them, and it's just a good way to get students involved at the beginning of the year. Our first football game is September 17th versus Fillmore, and then we have the Morrow Bay High School versus San Luis Obispo football game on September 24th. And we actually brought season passes for all of you guys to get you to come and support us. And FFA is doing their drive-through barbecue on September 29th, and they're selling their tickets right now And next month, on October 4th through the 9th, we have our homecoming week, which we're starting to prepare for. And that's about it from Morro Bay.
Excellent. Thank you, Connor. Appreciate it. Go ahead.
Connor, where's the Morro Bay versus San Luis game going to be?
It's at Morro Bay.
Thank you, Chris. And next from PB, we have Sandra Sanchez. She's a returning veteran.
Hi. Good evening. Hello, school board members. My name is Sandra Sanchez. I'm a senior at Pacific Beach. I'm expecting to graduate by January. Plan to make about 20 to 24 credits this marking period. And last school year at PB, we had 32 seniors graduated. And this school year, we are starting with 47 seniors. We are hoping all will complete their graduation requirements before June. Increasing student credits completion was a high priority goal last year. An average student credit increased from 7 per marking period from the years 2008 and 2009, and now to over 9 per marking period for the school years of 2009 to 2010. Our big goal this school year is to increase the overall percentage of students earning a minimum of 9 credits per marking period. By June 2010, 65% of students were meeting the requirement. We hope to increase that number to 75% this school year. To help with this, we have slightly changed the school's instructional schedule this year to expand students' opportunities to take direct instruction classes. Lastly, on Saturday the 11th, which is this Saturday, we have Aima Nari in Mission. It starts at 9 and it goes up to like around 2, and then it's a street painting festival. Hopefully all of you will have the opportunity to show up and see our drawing. It's going to be at Mission once again. Thank you, and that's it.
Thank you, Sandra. So it's PB has an entry in the Imaranari? I never can say it right. My Italian's as good as my French. All right, and it starts at 9, and you display the yeah. Picture will be there all day.
All day.
Okay, great. Thank you. And next and last but not least, Slow High.
Okay. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Chris Wan, and I'm the AESB president at San Luis Obispo High School. We had some things since August, and I'll try to make it chronologically. Well, we had a back-to-school night on August 24th, and it turned out to be very successful thanks to Black and Gold Booster with all the pizza. And we successfully started a new school year with 1,467 students enrolled. And we have a welcome back assembly this Friday, September 10th. And the fall sports season has started as well. And the football game against Dos Pueblos is also on this Friday. And if you're at the game last Saturday against Kingsburg, the game was very frustrating. But I'm hoping we're doing better this year. And we have courtesy cards to the board members and the district directors. It's a CIF admission card, I believe. And we have the first principal and parent advisory council meeting on September 16th at 7 p.m. at the library. That's it.
All right. Well, Connor, Sandra, and Chris, we appreciate it. We're very interested in if you want to stick around and are any items on the agenda are of interest to you. But we do understand that you've got a lot of things to do this evening probably and get up and go to school in the morning. So we understand if you can't stay for the meeting. But in the future and tonight, anytime you see anything on the agenda, we want to hear from our student reps too. So thanks very much. All right, next we will move to public comment. We have one request to speak, I believe, Mr. Interim Clerk. May I call you interim clerk? And that's Andrea Devitt.
Thank you. My name's Andrea Devitt. I'm a parent of a ninth grader and 11th grader at San Luis High. and I graduated in 1986 from San Luis High, and that makes me feel so old. But welcome, Dr. Prater. Hope you're enjoying the ride so far. And I just really want to applaud the school board for what they're doing. I'm a fiscally conservative Democrat, yet socially liberal Democrat. And I know you've waited to replace the assistant superintendent position until we have a state budget and until you know how this is going to affect other employees in the district. And I think that's a really, really wise decision and probably a very difficult decision to make. But I really just want to say I commend you for making that decision. It's kind of hard to celebrate Labor Day until without a state budget, and it's really difficult. I think the last time, I know you might want to fact check this because I don't really follow politics, but I think the last time that we passed a state budget on time, a guy named by the name of, I think it's John Laird, was chair of the Assembly Budget Committee in 2006. But again, I could be wrong because I don't really follow state politics. So, and although I've never been a school board member, I know it's an incredibly difficult job. I'm sure you actually lose money just on mileage alone with all the work you do. And I hope it doesn't get any more difficult after this next election. And I just want to say thank you and, again, commend you for waiting to replace that job. And way to go.
Thank you, Andrea. And do we have any other speakers for unscheduled public comment? Seeing no one, we'll move on. Before we do, though, I would like to acknowledge a dignitary in the audience, Jim Questenberry, who recent retiree, is here with us this evening. Nice to see you, Jim. So what do we do next, Chris? Oh.
So, President Millar, could I, while we're struggling with our technology, our expert is here, though. Could I ask that we push the superintendent's updates until we can get our PowerPoint working?
Why wouldn't we be okay with that? So we'll move on to item one, which is a resolution regarding delegation of signature authority. And let's see, who's going to do that one? Is that you, Russell?
Hold on, I got to push buttons here. That's high-tech stuff. And what we have in front of you tonight is a resolution whereby Ed Code requires us that a majority of the members of the governing board sign all orders, warrants, or contracts, or that governing board authorize an officer or employee of the district to sign such orders, warrants, and contracts. A new resolution is passed at the beginning of each year or whenever there's a change in authorized personnel to reauthorize or modify signature authority. The attached annual resolution removes Dr. Matakovich as an authorized signatory for the district. The resolution requires a majority vote of the board. The recommendation is the Board of Education approve resolution number 03-10-11 with the delegation of signature authority.
Very nicely put. I'll move adoption of resolution number 03-10-11. Thank you. And now, second item on the agenda is the resolution number 04-10-11, the GAN limit calculations for 2009-2010. Julie Lang.
Good evening. Every year, the Board of Education is asked to approve the district's GAN limit calculation. The GAN amendment was passed as part of Proposition 4 in 1979 with the purpose of limiting the increase in government spending to no more than the CPI and the increase in population. The attached form GAN is part of our unaudited actuals report, and most of the information is extracted from our financial system. The summary on page 2.5, lines 11 and 12, show that our adjusted appropriations limit exceeds the district's appropriations subject to the limit, and therefore the district has met the GAN limit for 2009-10 and 10-11. And unless there are any questions, at this time I'd like to recommend that the board approve resolution 041011. Excuse me.
Thank you, Julie. Does this have any it feels like a ritual we do every year.
It's
and
a
I
ritual.
Just wonder. well, there's a lot of rituals in education that we keep doing. But Mr. Buckman. Oh, please. Is there any public comment on this item? Any board discussion or further comment besides my snarky remarks? Seeing no one, Mrs. Holmes?
Mr. Buckman?
Aye.
Mr. Angel?
Aye.
Mr. Unger?
Yes.
Mr. Millar?
Aye.
Mrs. Sheffer? Passes 5-0.
All right. Dr. Prater, should we move on to item 3 while we wrestle with technology? And this, Julie, this one, take it away.
Thank you.
This is our unaudited, these are our audited actuals for the year.
Unaudited.
Oh, they're unaudited. Oh, that's right. They'll come later. But these are our actuals.
This is what we actually spent.
Okay,
they have
ahead.
Not been audited yet. Excuse me, I've got a terrible frog tonight. Tonight we're presenting the 2009-10 unaudited actuals financial report for your approval. These are the basis for the upcoming audit that we'll have later in September. The narrative on pages 3.1 through 3.3 go through all the district's funds and include the beginning fund balances, the actual revenues received, the actual expenditures, and then what the fund ended with for the year. If you'll notice on the adult education fund, there's only a balance of $100 in there, and I just wanted to
check. You know, after how many years that I've been doing this, it's a little bit embarrassing, but the transfers in, transfer out thing was always just sort of murky for me. So when we put money from one fund to another fund, it's not really an expenditure. It's more of a transfer of funds.
Require us to do, the revenue comes in a revenue code, but we have to transfer it out through an expenditure code
okay. In
the general fund, and it gets transferred into a revenue code in the adult ed fund.
And then the adult ed fund will show a transfer in,
in revenues and a transfer out through expenditures in the general fund.
All right.
And it's always different, so we never know.
All right, thank you.
It's a good question.
Please go ahead.
The deferred maintenance fund also works this way, where the revenue comes in through the general fund. We transfer out 100% of that revenue to the deferred maintenance fund, so there is no balance in the general fund for deferred maintenance. Something new that we got this year in Fund 35 is the Career Technical Education Facilities Program grant. We received $159,728. This funding is being used to complete the San Luis High School welding shop project. And we spent $95,003 in our revenue amounts compared to our second interim and our first interim budgets. And I just wanted to explain those. As you can see, our revenue limit went up. Our federal revenue went up and our state revenue went down. And the reason for that is that $1.6 million per ADA reduction that we received. At the beginning of the year, we thought that was coming in through a revenue limit account. Later in the year, the state said, no, that needs to be a state revenue account. So it's just moving from one revenue account to another, basically. So it increased revenue limit, decreased state revenues. Another notification that we got at the end of the year was that the state was not going to fund the balance on some of the flexible resources through state revenues and instead was going to fund them through the ARRA-SFSF funding, which is federal funding. So that's the reason for the federal revenues going up and the state revenues going down. And then our local revenues always go up throughout the year because we don't usually budget for those until we receive them. On the expenditure side, our salaries and benefits are almost the same as what we budgeted. They're pretty close. Our materials and supplies was a little bit less than what we budgeted, and that's because we always have our holding account for some receivables that we set up last year. And in November, the state said, no, you shouldn't have set those up. So we had to decrease our beginning fund balance by that $597,443. Leaving an ending fund balance of $22,535,146. From that, we deduct our components of our ending fund balance, which includes our 10% for economic uncertainty and our restricted ending balances. and also our flexible resource balances. And our one-time funds and the lottery and other, leaving an unappropriated ending fund balance of $3,150,934. And at this time, I'd like to open it up to questions, or Russell may have some comments on it.
Just real quickly, when I was reading this, and I took up some time with Russell, so I think I understand it, but I just thought I'd bring it up publicly. When I was looking at Fund 20, I noticed that we had roughly $8 million, and we had an interest income of $60,000. I went down to Fund 21, and we have almost $1 million and an interest income of $119,000. And in that...
In Fund 21, the $119,000 is interest and...
But it's just something that caught my eye, and it was hoping we were making investments wisely in both accounts.
It should be on your form, I think, 21. Actually, it isn't separated out. It's just the $119,000. So I'd have to get back to you on that
okay.
to see what the other
it
was.
It just was something that jumped out at me.
Okay.
Thanks.
Would you like me to get back to you about that?
Yeah, that would be great, okay. just so I know.
Sure.
Well, maybe either Julie or Russell, you could talk a little bit about briefly about how we do our, where we get interest income from, and how those investments are handled.
Well, right now we have substantial majority of our funds invested in the county treasury, and as of 2 months ago, the interest rate being paid on county treasury money was at an all-time low. It was something like a 0.52% was what you were getting as a rate of return. But because of the type of investments they are, for the reasons for which we hold them, we put them in very secure non-risk positions. And the county treasury, the local agency investment fund are two examples, both of which return very low amounts on your interest income. Seeing them in some sort of bonds or some other type of instrument, I think keeping them in the county treasury is a prudent action in order to safeguard their value.
Thank you. Mark, you know, I did have one other comment that I wanted to make before that. I really wanted to compliment the entire staff, because it's my understanding towards the end of the year or throughout the year, they were able to work within the fiscal restraints and the budget and actually save us about $2.5 million.
Yeah.
So I just really wanted to thank the staff for that.
Great. The staff and site staffs particularly. Mm-hmm.
Sites and departments.
Chris?
Yeah, I'm just looking back at 3.4. One thing that we talk about is one-time funds, and that's category number 7, $110,000. But really, if we look at almost all of number 6, wouldn't it be fair to say that most of those things could be considered one-time funds because they're grants, categorical funding, things like that, which I think we've found that the state has been more than willing to cut? Would that be a fair assessment of those?
Well, I think the one-time funds that are under Category 7 are funds that we've already received and we're no longer receiving at all, whereas Category 6, we're continuing.
We're designating as one-time. We don't have to do it this way. We don't have to track $3.7 million as belonging to any separate category. It could be just part of our general fund, but we want to be trying to use those funds when it comes time to use them for the purpose they were intended. At this time, they're basically designated as a safety net for us in the event of a catastrophic event, or should we receive a funding hit from the state of California, we'll be able to access this 3.7 for whatever purpose we want. But you're right, it's not duplicated this year to the extent we don't save it. If we save it, it goes into this pot of money, and it accumulates exponentially for that purpose.
And I had a question, and that kind of clears it up. On page 3.1, where we discuss the restricted lottery, ELAP, Medi-Cal, those things. So we, even though we have greater flexibility now in how we use those monies, it's a board decision to continue to use the monies for the purposes they were designated for.
The flexible money. Okay. There are still restricted monies, ELAP and special
ed. The flexible,
ed
and, right.
Right, yeah, but in 10-11.
Okay.
And it's a strategic decision because we'll still do deferred maintenance where required, but to actually move the money from our general fund to this restricted deferred maintenance fund would place that money outside of the general fund's use. And so we keep it within the general fund. We will repair the roofs. We will replace the carpets. We will fix windows, but we'll do it strategically rather than as some sort of a pre-planned program.
And it lets us retain flexibility.
And keep flexibility, yes.
Okay, excellent. Other questions? Any public input on this item? Okay. And what are we doing with this item tonight?
Well, you have a choice, as usual. You know, this is a first hearing of a two-hearing item, but you can waive that and accept it tonight.
I would move approval of item number 3.
And I would second that, as long as it means that we don't reproduce all this paper. So do we save reproducing all this paper the second time?
Okay.
That's true.
I'll second that.
Okay. We have a motion by Chris and a second by Mark to approve this item. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Passes 5-0. Just my math. Thank you, Julie.
Thank you. Tonight I have the proposed revisions to our board policy regarding identification education under Section 504. And the wording is fairly minor. I think the intent is maybe greater than the wording, but the Americans with Disabilities Act of 1990 was amended at the end of 2008, so it is now the Americans with Disabilities Act Amendments Act, or ADAAA. And within that, there's always been a list associated with Section 504. It was never intended to be an exhaustive list of major life activities, but the Congress specifically added these categories to that non-exhaustive list. So we thought it prudent to go ahead and put them into our board policy since we chose to have that list in the first place.
Ian, are these, so it's the underlying group of words in the first paragraph that's really the new addition to this policy?
Yes, those are the words that were added to that list.
And it's, and so if I'm understanding you correctly, it's because the policy undertakes to sort of give examples of what this is that we felt.
Thinking, concentrating, reading, communicating, that Congress specifically added in the ADAAA. There are other options. You could remove the whole bit and just have a more generic board policy, but.
And is this a CSBA model kind of?
This is not the CSBA model. Our current board policy. The CSBA model is actually much more condensed, generic wording. Okay. Our board policy has been more specific.
And is there a real-world impact for us adding this language for our district in the way we proceed with 504 students?
I have to say, regardless of adding this wording or not, there is a real-world impact of the revisions from ADAAA. Okay. Congress specifically set about making the law a little bit more broad. And so the reason for adding this wording was to make the eligibility categories a little more broad. They also clarified some things that would, I don't want to say lower the standard or lower the threshold, but they said specifically that you need to consider a physical or mental impairment that causes or has a substantially limits a major life activity a little less narrowly than the
compliance or conformance with the amended IDA. I can't remember all the letters. There's no shortage of letters in Washington.
A lot of A's.
And we are not, I guess what I'm trying to establish for myself is that we are not undertaking a broader category of individuals as qualifying under Section 504 than we would have to under the law.
Exactly. I think conformance was the better word.
Okay.
And you're correct. Whether we had amended this policy or not, as a district, we're updating our administrative regulations as well as our 504 manual, our internal policy manual, as well as our forms to go into conformance with some of these requests.
Excellent. Ellen, did you have any? Did I ask all the questions you
had? Yes, and I actually spoke with Ian earlier.
Oh, good. Okay. And Mark?
Just real quickly, and I don't know whether this is for Jackie or for Ian, when you talked about the AARs, is there going to be a – there was one other change that I remember in this, and that was that it goes from a 504 triennial review to an annual review?
Well, they don't specifically use the words. OCR hasn't asked in the regulations that we use the word annual and triennial. They ask for a regular review, and then OCR has said in the past in some of their letters that when in doubt, follow IDA's lead as far as timelines.
Thanks. I was just worried about impact on staffing and time.
It has the potential. I mean, nationally, there's only about currently 1.2% of students in school systems that have a 504 plan, but Congress has said we want you to broaden, so the impact seems obvious or potentially obvious. So, welcome.
Is there any public comment on this item? How is the board comfort level with approving this item without a second reading? Then I'll move approval of revised board policy 6164.6.
Can I interrupt for just 1 second and ask Ian's input on this? I understand that you're working on some substantial regulations work and backup materials that go with this. Would it be more beneficial that they wait for a second reading and let you get that work finished before we approve this policy?
As I said, we're redoing our administrative regulations as well as our internal policy manual.
These other two processes of the internal manual and the ARs, is it likely that the wording of this policy is going to change?
It seems unlikely at this time.
Okay. Thanks, Kim, for bringing that issue up. So we have a motion by myself, I think, and a second by Phil. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 5-0.
Thank you,
Ian. And we'll go through the action consent, and it'll be like the finale. It'll be like the finale. Okay, please let me know what items you'd like pulled. Number 5, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Number 6, approval to hire elementary class size instructional aides for 2010. Pull that one, please. Number 7, acceptance of donations. Number 8, disposition of surplus property. Number 9, approval of purchase orders. Number 10, approval of warrants and payroll. Number 11, approval of out-of-state field trips, San Luis Obispo High School Future Farmers of America, Ag Leadership and Ag Economics Government class to Washington, D.C., New York, and Indiana. And 7 through 11. It's the Glenn Olker mode. And a second by Mr. Unger and a second by Mrs. Sheffer. All in favor?
Aye.
Approved. All opposed? Approved 5-0. This is a rare evening where I'm the one that pulled the consent item. So, and really the reason I wanted to is I'd just like to have just a brief sort of overview about how we arrive at our numbers for classroom aides. I see Rita or Rick or just so the public knows that we actually have a method that we go through to achieve, to arrive at these numbers.
Yeah, when we have class sizes reach a certain kind of threshold of enough students, we provide an hour or more aid time to those teachers. And currently we have, if we were to look at a snapshot today, 28 classes in the elementary school that either are combination classes at the 4th through 6th grade level or have more than 32 students. The number is what we've used for a number of years. We actually lowered the threshold 2 years ago to 32 for an...
With 28 kids in a 4-6 combo, you'll have 1 hour of aid time?
Correct.
Thank you, Rick. That was just what I was looking for. I'll move approval of item 6.
I'll second it.
Any public input or discussion by the board? All in favor?
Aye.
approved or opposed. Sorry, it passes 5-0. We could do reports. So he's going to juggle. So. We could do reports by board members. Oh, or no? Maybe we shouldn't do reports. Hey. Really? Now that we will we will move to the superintendent's update.
Thank you. I want to thank you for your patience and flexibility, and what I would like to frame out for everyone is tonight I'd like the opportunity to have Rita and Darla share an update with you regarding Data Director and the efforts that have been made thus far. Additionally, I'd like to have Russell talk to you. Is just about there. Okay, Rita, take it away.
Well, it's teamwork. Let's see if we can get that back up again. Last year, the board approved our district's purchase of Data Director, and since then, various staff members have been working together to implement this data system. And tonight, Darla Batistic, our teacher on special assignment in the area of assessment, is going to provide an update. If we can't show it here, please know that you have the handout in front of you, and she will just progress through the slides to give you that update. Thank you.
Thank you for inviting us here tonight to share with you an exciting new tool for teachers and administrators to help us improve instruction. It is our new Data Director system. And it is just a quick overview for the board members. It's an off-site data warehouse, which means that we do not have any software or hardware here in the school district. It's all off-site at Riverside Public, and that makes it accessible for teachers and administrators from home and also from school. It's a secure site, and so all of the users that are trained have to have a login and a password. There are three major things that we do in the data director system, and that is store information, demographic and assessment information. We also report on that information on assessment that we state assessment and local assessment, and then we also are going to have the opportunity to score assessments, both district benchmark assessments and also individual classroom assessments for teachers. Our database has been set up specifically with about 4 years of student demographic data, including this year's, and also 4 to 5 years of state testing information. All of the big state tests are there, our STAR results, our CELT, CAISY, and our physical fitness results, as well as 1 year of district data. We have district writing assessment and several reading assessments, as you can see, loaded into the database. We get a package that is the same reports and assessment information for all of our school sites, and then from there, school sites can customize it for their own needs and really build a system that will work for their school, tracking the kind of information that they're interested in tracking. So that's one of the exciting parts of it for our schools. We have embarked on quite a bit of training for Data Director. We've had the Data Director folks here at our school district a couple of times to do some training on site. They also have trained a small group of us via webinar, and they do on daily phone support and training with me and my counterpart, Jamie Fazio, in IS&T. We have one more planned for this year. And from there, what I've done is I've taken the Data Director training, and then we're rolling it out to our sites. And so we've offered a couple of site leader trainings so that we can get the principal and then one or two other site members trained. And then from there, I have been going out to sites and training the users, the end users, teachers, and support staff, and other administrators at the site. So it's pretty exciting. We currently have 19 site administrators using the system, 140 teachers and 10 other district and site GRIP information so that it can inform their instruction. We'll be entering assessment data as we gather it this year. And then moving into winter of this year, we'll start scoring assessments fall a little bit this fall as our first common assessments come about, and then into winter at all of our secondary sites. And then spring of this year into the beginning of next year, we'll bring our elementary assessment scoring systems up as well. And throughout it all, of course, we'll continue to train the users. So thank you for approving this purchase. I think it's a powerful tool that will help us do some of the things that Victoria Bernhardt suggests we do, and that is gather some data so that we can figure out our system that provides the results that we currently are getting, and then use that information to do some focused school improvement, of course, for our ultimate purpose, improving learning for all students.
Thank you, Darla. I find it reassuring that the teacher who made the budget comprehensible to members of the C.L. Smith Site Council years ago is on this project.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Eric, did you want to follow up on some things?
Well, I just want, before we go into our next statement, I just want to say to Darla and Rita, thank you is critical. So I want to thank you. Well done. Our next presentation is actually Russell, and he'll talk about the jobs bill.
Thank you. And I think that it's important to note that in a surprise move from the federal government, they have appropriated a substantial amount of funding for the purpose of specific actions to preserve, reinstate, or extend jobs. And by that I mean they're giving us money to be able to increase our workforce, create more jobs, or call back laid off employees, or minimize the furlough days. And in appropriating this money and the methodology that they're going to disperse it to us, it turns out to be rather substantial in the amount. And looking on the website today, the CDE has put out preliminary estimates of how much each district in the state is going to receive. San Luis Coastal's allocation, when appropriated by the legislature, and that's a key piece, when appropriated, is $1,070,000 in round numbers. So it is in our email yesterday. We have received many questions about whether basic aid districts will receive federal education jobs fund money. The revised funding formula is based on revenue limits, which we don't receive, which has led to much confusion. The answer to the question is yes. CDE has released the preliminary calculations for local educational agencies, including basic aid districts. So we've been included in their calculations when they go to disperse the money. SB 847, written by Steinberg, allocates the funds. It has passed the legislature, but it has not been acted upon by the governor. Okay, so this is in a handout in front of you for future. The second page relates to federal funds. Two bills that appropriate federal funds, Senate Bill 847, noted above, and Assembly Bill 185, were sent to the governor. If signed, the bills will permit the allocation of more than $2 billion in one-time federal Education Jobs Act funds, state fiscalization stabilization funds, more commonly referred to as SFSF, and school improvement grant, SIG funds, to school districts. So we're waiting the governor's signature, at which time it becomes official that we'll receive the money, and the state funding, after he's already minimized educational funding, I think we'll have to wait and see for sure. But the key for this money is that it's going to be treated like SFSF money with all of the reporting and specific requirements attached to it. We will have very narrow options on how to use this money. When we are sure that we're going to get the money, we will be developing a response to how we're going to spend that money. An example is the decreasing class sizes, hiring, pushing teachers, pull out programs, putting together some sort of a mix and match. And the reality is we actually have 2 years to spend this money. Even though it's 1 year, one time, it's on a federal timeline. And the federal fiscal year in September 30th. So we could do like a 20-80 allocation, 20% this year, 80% next year. As long as we obligate the money prior to September 30th, i.e. hire 10 teachers, then we have fulfilled the requirements of the money, and we're going to be in the clear. So we will bring you additional information on this money once we've seen the final bill that's been signed by the governor and agreed to and needed.
Okay. Great. Yeah, Russell, you mentioned hiring employees and that's what this money is primarily to be used for. Is it both certificated and classified employees?
Yes.
Thank you.
And the September 30th deadline, can we identify that we're going to rehire teachers and then obviously, I mean, would we be attempting to decrease class sizes in this school year?
Yeah, that would be creating jobs in this school year, okay? So one of the problems with that at the elementary level is you're going to be messing with the current construct of the classes.
Right.
And that's probably not something that we want to do without a lot of forethought. But what we can do is that we can say in 11-12, we're going to go back to a class size of, you could say 20 to 1, or you could say 26 to 1, or pick your ratio. And that will require us to hire 10 new teachers. I make that up, but it could be 10, it could be 15. And that would be the money that we use. Remember, it's one-time money.
Right.
And it's going to be our biggest issue is how to plan and work around the constraints of one-time money for a continuing need. Uses is that at the high school, they have natural trimester and semester breaks. We won't have to mess with the class construct if we choose to lower class sizes in math, in algebra, geometry, or English, in ninth grade, 10th grade, whatever our choices might be. That's something we can discuss as a staff and bring back as a recommendation.
Dr.
Yes, thank you, Russell. On September 21st, Rita will be back, and we're going to present to you a more detailed analysis of our achievement data from last year, and hopefully present to you a trend analysis that you'll be able to look at. And I think Russell and I and Rick were talking about this earlier today, that it's apropos, because the data should inform the next set of decisions and as to what to do with that money in a targeted strategic way. So I think the data should reveal some interesting things for us, and I'm hoping to be able to formulate a logical response to you with respect to that money.
All right. And any board member questions on that piece? Any public input? And then, Eric, did you have one other part? There you go.
Yeah, I just want to let you know.
Finest there. So just this right arrow button.
And look up there.
There's something about this building, I think. You know, there's poltergeist.
Yes, it is. This is the time of year where we kind of see the fruits of our labors in terms of enrollment and staffing projections. So Dr. Prater asked me to give a little update on kind of where we are based on where we've been in projecting our enrollments and where we are with staffing. So it's I have kind of a chemistry metaphor there, because I think dealing with enrollment and dealing with staffing is far more science than it is art. We wouldn't want artists dealing with some of these things, but it is a kind of a chemical concoction that we put together to determine what we're doing. Uh-oh, I'm pressing the arrows. Ah, there we go. So lots of factors go into it. So do I just press the arrow from now on?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Thank you. Lots of issues go into, or a lot of concoctions go into this chemical of projecting our enrollment. You know, we have bubbles of students coming through. We have real estate startups. Economic factors certainly have been a big thing. We look at five-year averages. We look at hospital births. And your former superintendent, Dr. Valentine, took great pride But what we end up with is we get a total enrollment and a total enrollment projection. And if you were to look at what's happened in our school district over the last several years, you'll see that we have declined if we go back years before this, this is regular ed enrollment. This does not count special ed. We've had a pretty steady decline. We kind of bottomed out in 2008 with 6,903 students at CBED's date, and we've kind of had this upward climb. Today, we're sitting at 7,116, I think, as of today's counts, because we get these counts every day for the first 10 days of school. So we're up a little bit, although I don't think we're going to keep going up. I mean, if we were to predict today what's going to happen next year, we're going to probably flatten and perhaps decrease, although we're not at that point yet. Like with any data, we can aggregate it and disaggregate it, and it's kind of interesting sometimes to look at individual grade levels or groups of students like EL students. If you look at our seventh grade enrollment, for example, it doesn't look like the rest of the trend. It's just falling. And that's largely because, not because we're having seventh graders just depart us and go to private schools, it's because we have this very small fifth and sixth grade class. So that enrollment is going to continue to decline, which has definite implications for both of our middle schools. Both of our middle schools are going to be considerably smaller next year. In 2005, they had 488 students. Some of those were sixth graders, which no longer exist at that school. And today, they're down to 375 students. So they've had a marked decrease in students and, therefore, a marked decrease in staff, which leads us to the next part. Student enrollment is what drives our staffing decisions. We staff our schools based on how many students are going to be going to those schools or how many we expect to go to those schools. And we have sort of a usual chemical compound to put that all together, and that is that we project the ratios based on the enrollment projections with these formulas. K3, a 20-to-1 cap. That's not a 20-to-1 average. We say we're going to cap classes at 20. And any student over 20, we pay a penalty for under class size reduction. This is traditional. The rules are a little different right now. We have a 4th through 6th grade ratio of 28-to-1. And we have a 7th through 12th grade ratio of 31-to-1.2. It's kind of a funny formula because at the secondary level, all full-time equivalents are guaranteed one preparation period. That's why you get that 1.2 for a staffing ratio. So staffing, it's closer to 26-to-1 as far as the staffing ratio at the secondary schools. Last year, as you know, we had to cut between 8 environments as a catalyst to kind of change our formula, which is what we did. We projected that if we didn't replace up to 15 people, we can take that savings, and that can be part of that big problem we had. We estimated about $820,000 could be saved by just not replacing some of our retirements. But that meant we had to change our chemical compound a little bit. And so we decided to go with a K3 ratio, or K3 cap, I'm sorry, of 23-to-1. So we let the class sizes float up at the kindergarten, first, second, and third grade level, capped them at 23. Now, we have situations where we have more than 23 students at K3 class. Just as before, we had situations where we had 21 or 22 students when we capped it. We pay the penalties for that. We kept 4th through 6th grade at 28-to-1, and the 7th through 12th, we changed the ratio to 31.6-to-1.2, which is about a half a student per class. It comes to about a 26.3 ratio. That's about the equivalent of half a student to each class. We projected by doing this, we may be able to get up to 15 retirements. I need to let the board know, we didn't realize all those. We didn't realize 15 retirements out of it. As we looked at the needs for staffing, some of the positions were situations where we had to replace them. You can't staff people. We tell the principals. In personnel, I start working with the voluntary transfers, the involuntarily transfers, temps, temporary teachers getting their jobs back, figuring out where we're going to put everything. But then we have to make adjustments. Last spring, about May, we realized that the enrollment at Teach Elementary School was far more than we projected. We had projected that school to have 96 students next year, which would be 3 teachers, about 32 students per class. 4th, 5th, 6th grade is the composition of Teach Elementary. We ended up with about 116 students asking to go to teach elementary school. So we needed to add a teacher. And sometimes we add that teacher by pulling it from some other site. But when we looked at the demographics again, the composition of people requesting to go to teach were coming from all over the place. And we couldn't just neatly pull a teacher from one site and place it there. So we added a teacher to teach elementary school. Through the summer, our principals do a good job, and their staffs and their secretaries do a good job of tracking incoming students, incoming kindergartners, new enrollees, and also students who might be leaving the school district. By the end of this summer, we realized that C.L. Smith, for whatever reason, was over 30 students more than we had projected. They needed to get a teacher. We actually literally added a teacher to C.L. Smith the week before school started so that they could open school with a full slate of teachers. And the numbers bear that out. I mean, even 10 days into school, they needed a teacher. Now, we could have pulled a teacher from another school to do that. There were a couple possible candidates, Sinsheimer Elementary and Del Mar Elementary. But if we had pulled a teacher from Sinsheimer and placed them over at C.L. Smith, which we probably could have done, it would have created a list of combination classes at Sinsheimer Elementary in just about every grade level and just about across the board. And it would also allow no growth at that school. And sometimes we need a school to be able to send new families to within a reasonable attendance area. So we kept Sinsheimer as kind of our stopgap for new families that might come into a close area. Instead of paying the penalties of a class size increase, we could say, listen, Hawthorne's a great school, but we're capped at 23 in our first grade class. Sinsheimer Elementary is close by. We provide busing, and this is where we'll place the students. So we did that with Sinsheimer. Del Mar was the other example. Excuse me. And some of the same situations at Del Mar. It's the only elementary school. Had some population issues. Whereas I think the student was saying, they had some classes the first day of school that were at the 34, 35, 36 range. And so we added a 0.4 FTE, two sections, to Morro Bay High School. They placed them in their science department, but by doing so, they were able to reschedule a large number of students and get those class sizes down to a reasonable level. And we could have other adjustments to the formula as we go on. So what are some conclusions? Well, we ended up with 7,116 students as of today. This is regular ed students. That's 16 students over our projection, which makes Ed Valentine 99.8% accurate, right up there with Ivory Soap. And we ended up with 11 less teachers overall, 11 point something, I think. We were seeking about an $820,000 savings. It ends up being a little over $1 million in savings by that elimination of those teaching positions. But no one lost a job. This was all through retirement. And our special ed population continues to grow. And our EL population, which I haven't even talked about in the demographics, has grown another 4%, which means at this point, 14%, one out of every seven students in our school district is an English learner. So it's a very significant part of our population. And we absolutely have some other things in the laboratory as we kind of move forward. Because as Mr. Miller was saying, we know that an unstable economy brings some unpredictable trends. We're seeing a lot of multifamily dwellings. We're seeing a lot more homeless and families in transition situations. And who knows what's going to happen with the real estate market in the future. And we also know that the state legislature just passed what's known as the Romero Bill, which kind of takes us a narrow opening and widens it for the possibility of open enrollment between districts. And this will be something the board will be spending some time in board policy developing how we will address what will probably be a number of students requesting to come into our district and having the permission to do so. So we'll have to effectively be able to kind of contend with that. And with that, that's kind of a report on where we are with enrollment. So any questions? I'll be happy to try to address.
Thank you, Rick. That's an excellent presentation. Anybody have any questions? Okay. Thank you. And boy, where are we? Reports by board members. I'll lead off. So, I just it'll be pretty brief. I just want to acknowledge, and this is totally personal privilege, and thank you for your forbearance. My daughter Christine. Oh, Chris.
I was able to visit a few schools last week. Getting to see actually some blind students being served by County Office of Education folks, and then also that allowed me to see some teaching that was being done in our schools. And I wanted to thank Raleigh Ringier for letting me into her class at Laguna. She has a student that was served by one of our county employees, and also she's taken on the challenge of a student with some disabilities, and he's doing really great. Some pretty neat technology this kid's using. I want to thank Andy Pro, I believe is how you pronounce her name, Pru, at C.L. Smith. I got a chance to go into the preschool there, and they also have a student who's visually impaired, and it's fun to see a three-year-old, four-year-old starting to learn how to do Braille, and just the acceptance of the students in that program is great. And then I got to go over to Hawthorne as well, and they've got another visually impaired student there in one of their classes, and just the accommodations that are being made are great. And I want to thank all of our staff for welcoming me and allowing me to talk to them. I did talk to some of the younger teachers. Actually, I tried to talk to a bunch of teachers at C.L. Smith, and almost to a teacher, they were all happy that they had jobs because they recognize that.
At San Luis High, which was kind of returning to old stomping grounds, which was very fun for me to be there and welcome students and teachers and see the enthusiasm. And also I attended back to school night at Bishop's Peak and teach. And that was fun for me because it's a campus I haven't spent a lot of time visiting. Talking with teachers and seeing the new parents, particularly the new families coming in, the kindergarten families, and feeling very excited to have their kids attending the neighborhood school. Talked to several teachers, a couple of whom are teaching combination classes and are doing really a good job of collaborating. It was interesting and exciting to see although it may not be the situation every teacher hopes for, the feeling among the fellow teachers of we're all in this together, we're going to help you succeed, we're going to help you make this be a successful year with a combination classroom was really exciting. For me, the best part was having the invitation to come read to students, warm welcomes I received visiting the schools.
Thank you. I got to visit Los Osos Middle School and Laguna Middle School, and the level of excitement this year just seemed to be extremely high, and it was very nice and very exciting to be there and to talk with the parents and the teachers. I also want to sort of congratulate, Jeff Guy for having a very interesting beginning of the school year. I know for specifically about the flood, but I think there was one other fairly tough. What was the other situation, Jeff?
Power dropped out.
Oh, yeah, the power went out and the whole
thing.
So just wanted to congratulate you on just an easy start and into going into the school year.
And Phil?
Several back-to-schools. I got to attend several back-to-school nights as well. And the heartbreaking football game. It's terrible. I'm still broken up. What I'm noticing in classrooms is that the district has started to do the first 20 days of literacy program. And I've gotten to volunteer in a first-grade classroom and a second-grade classroom. And I see both the lessons being, or all the lessons being in work with this kid. Well, he sits there, or he said, teacher said, I have a difficult class, and sat the teacher down, pulled up data director, and said, no, you don't. Look at that. So, you know, that's a great thing to see that takes out the excuses.
Spoken like an experienced teacher. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. We are at the advanced agenda portion of the proceedings. And Chris?
Yeah, I think we all got an email asking for support for resolution for Walk to School Day. and I'd like to bring that forward and see if the board has an interest in passing that as a resolution.
I can...
Or bringing it forward as a resolution, anyway.
I would heartily support that resolution, and I know that the Safe Routes to Schools is very near and dear to PTA, and also I was able to attend several years ago a walk-to-school program at Hawthorne that's been functioning very well in collaboration with the city putting in new crosswalks, so I'm very excited about it.
And we need to take some kind of action because it's time-sensitive, isn't it? Okay, so does the board want to bring this forward at the next meeting rather than wait to rediscuss? And anybody else for advanced agenda? It's not a record, but it's a darn good meeting, folks. And I appreciate the administration's presentations. As problematic as technology seems to be in this space, this building, it came through and it was very helpful. So thank you all. We'll be adjourned.